in Seattle, Seattle. And you need to buy yourself a home. We'll be right there for you, because we're the realtors that you can trust. So go to RodandConsidDow.com.
Don't go anywhere unless you want to. It's the Ron and Don Show, starring Ron and Don, and sometimes me, at ronanddon.com.
Hey, you guys, what's going on? Welcome to episode 695 now of the Ron and Don Show, and we are live in the Les Schwab studio.
What is up, Ron and Don Nation?
Hey, coming up on the Ron and Don Show, let's talk about the fact that you probably saw this in Seattle Times. I wrote something about it in our newsletter on my Facebook page. Don O'Neill, Ron Upshaw, follow us on our socials. About Seattle year to year, real estate going up 14%. It was predicted to go up 3%. What is going on? What does the future hold? And especially when interest rates are climbing back up. Why are interest rates climbing back up? Seems nuts. So we'll talk about that. Also, let's talk about what we're watching, what we're reading, what we're listening to, what we're learning. Before we get to that, though, let's get to this. It's interesting. Russell Wilson traded to the Denver Broncos. Now the Denver Broncos have released him. They still owe him a lot of money. He is looking to sell his home in Denver. I know the stager. In fact, the stager we use is the same stager for Russell's house. It's still for sale here in Seattle. He hasn't sold that yet. You think he'd hire Tyler Lockett, because Tyler Lockett, I guess, is wanting to become a real estate agent, or is an agent, at least after his football career. You think that Tyler would list that house and sell it for him. He hasn't been able to do that yet. Anyway, it seems like Russell Wilson, all of a sudden, has become a sympathetic figure in the way that Sean Payton treated him there. If you look at him statistically, this first year, it was really rough. The second year, he actually had a better year than Patrick Mahomes did, statistically. He was a top 8 quarterback in the NFL. So when people say Russ was cooked, statistically, last year, he wasn't. I just don't think Sean Payton likes him, right? He doesn't like the Jesus stuff. He didn't like the office stuff. He didn't like him having his own staff. In fact, one of the guys that used to work at ESPN Radio here in Seattle was Russell's private football coach and left the radio to go down there. And then he ended up getting fired because Sean Payton, when he stepped in, is like, not putting up with this. Ron, what are your thoughts on Russell Wilson? He got on a plane. He came up here when Pete Carroll got fired. All the guys got together. Russell took pictures, put them up on his Instagram, Facebook page. You are a lifelong Denver Broncos fan. You are not a Russell Wilson fan. Do you feel yourself becoming more sympathetic?
Not really for Russell. I'm not rooting against him per se, but I think he sort of put himself in this position. I think Russell Wilson bought his own hype and put himself in this position. And so the Sean Payton thing was unfortunate. In hindsight, I think going into it, you thought, oh, Drew Brees was a shorter quarterback, similar size to Russell Wilson. They had similar arm strength. Maybe, you know, Sean Payton was able to take Drew Brees after a devastating injury and turn him into a Super Bowl winning Hall of Fame quarterback. So maybe he can do the same thing to Russell Wilson. I get the logic there. You brought up many of the reasons why it didn't work. And I think the thing for me with Russell is he's reaping what he sowed, in the sense of believing a narrative about himself that just wasn't true. And so he's now come face to face with reality. And I'm not going to boohoo about Russell Wilson. He's getting paid $39 million next year, whether he plays or not.
No, this year.
This upcoming season.
Yeah.
So the Denver Broncos owe him $39 million. If he's working at a Burger King.
Well, they owe him 85 over the
cap hits 85, but I believe they only.
They still got to pay him next year as well.
Right. So he's getting $39 million regardless of what happens to him in the NFL. So I'm not going to be like, oh, poor Russell Wilson. So the interesting thing to me is going to watch what happens now, because there are not a ton of teams that came out and went like, oh my God, how do we get Russell Wilson to be our quarterback? And it might happen. Like, he might land on a team.
Everyone's... You haven't had a draft yet, though. So a lot of these teams are lined up. You're going to see who they draft, and then you have to pay him the league minimum. So I think statistically, when you look at him, I think
he'll probably play next year.
I think they will.
I think he will play. But like when Tom Brady became available, teams clamored for him right away.
But they're you weren't facing a draft. You have seven great quarterbacks in this upcoming draft.
There doesn't seem to be a big zhuzh around Russell Wilson as a free agent right now. I hope that he pays attention to this. When you saw his Instagram post, and I reference him a lot, but Danny O'Neill that we used to work with, I read his newsletter, and he was like, wow, the writing in your Instagram post is the same old Russ. It's the like, hey, you know, tough people, tough people don't quit, or God's got me, I'm got the, and so like, no, dude, that's not the messaging right now. The messaging
we
is...
We want you to get caught in a whorehouse. Do some cocaine, right?
No, not that. But
is that what you want?
I want it to be self-aware.
Get a DUI and kill a pedestrian.
No, self-aware to say, hey, city of Denver, it didn't work out. I'm sorry. I had high hopes. I did not win enough football games at the helm. I'm not going to do the tough people last, God's got me routine. I'm just going to say, I wish it would have had a different result. Thanks for everyone that supported me there. I wish you would have had a better result.
I think Sean Payton's screwed. I think we're very lucky here. I think we should thank Russell Wilson. We're going to have a great defense. We have all these great draft picks because of the worst trade probably in NFL history. Russell did actually have a very good second year. I think a lot of this is Sean Payton's ego. I think he should have made Russell Wilson work there. Instead, now they're going to have to go out and spend what little draft capital they have to draft another quarterback or to pay for another quarterback. I think Denver's screwed. And when you look at Sean Payton when he was in New Orleans, all the guy did down there was party his ass off. He partied a lot. He's a partier. He went through a divorce down there. You can find him down on Bourbon Street. They did win. Think about this. I don't know why people loved Sean Payton so much. The last time he won one Super Bowl, and it was 15 years ago. 15 years ago he won a Super Bowl. So what have you done for me lately? Nothing. He has done nothing. And he likes to be a dick, just like Bill Parcells and all those guys. Like, he enjoys that. So he is teed off on Russ. People that didn't like Russ have enjoyed that. And Russell Wilson has taken the high road. So in the way he communicates, not necessarily my cup of tea either, but it's a cup of tea, right? It's not a cup of Maker's Mark. The guy doesn't get in trouble. He's dedicated to the game. He's dedicated to his family. He's dedicated to God. And it's very interesting because now people are questioning if when he left Seattle, he was going to the Hall of Fame, went to two Super Bowls. You look at all his numbers. Now it's really shifted, hasn't it? The reason why we went to two Super Bowls is because the Legion of Doom, the Legion of Boom,
Marshawn.
The defense that we had. So that narrative has really changed now that Russell Wilson has had more exposure. But again, statistically, he was one of the top. He was in the top 10 last year statistically as far as quarterbacks go, and now someone gets to pay him nothing. And the question is this: should it be the Seattle Seahawks? Should you bring him back? You got rid of him 2 years ago, get all this draft capital, and now you can bring him back for the league minimum. Like Denver pays him. We will see you on the other side of this.
Hey, it's Ron here for Ron and Don Real Estate. I had a meeting this week with a client, and this situation unfortunately happens a lot. Her brother passed away. He named her the estate, the head of the estate, to get to deal with the house. All right. And so she's overwhelmed, has a lot of stuff going on with this house, dealing with probate, dealing with lawyers, dealing with bills. She didn't expect this. She was just living her life. And now she's dealing with selling a house that was not hers. And so it's a big process. It's a heavy lift. There's a lot of moving parts emotionally and within the transaction. And she called me and said, Ron, I need some help to do this deal. I love my brother, but wow, this is a lot. So if you are in a situation like that where someone passes away, maybe your mom or or dad is going into assisted living, and there is a house sitting there that seems like an insurmountable thing, an insurmountable mountain to climb. Call me, call Don. We're experts in this. We know how to help you get out of that tough spot and get a really good result. So the website is ronandonsitdown.com. It's ronandonsitdown.com. You can email me directly, ron@ronandon.com. I hope to talk to you soon. It's a tough time, but we are going to help carry the load for you. ronandonsitdown.com.
All right, you guys, what's going on? Welcome back to the Ron and Don Show. Headlines, Seattle Times. Real estate up 14%. Ron, we were told it was going up 3%. And then everyone's been waiting for, and we told everybody this during the holidays. And I wrote about this this week in our Ron and Don newsletter, The Nation News. If you want to read it, go to ronandon.com, get signed up for The Nation News. We don't sell your information. And it's either Ron and I, we take a couple of pictures, let you know what's going on in our life, and then typically we write something that we are learning in our lives, and it could be about real estate. Sometimes it's about other stuff. So we love writing it. It's not generated by AI. So check it out, and then you can always write us and respond, and we will try real hard to write and respond back. Real estate up 14% in Seattle. Ron, that was the headline. What say you?
I think it's just a supply and demand. It's classic economics when you look at Seattle specifically. And what do I mean by that? Supply and demand driven. So when you and I talked about this a lot of saying, when you read national stories about real estate, it's taking into account everything in the nation. And that we live in a very unique market. We are not the same as a house in Cleveland, Ohio. We're not the same market as Louisville, Kentucky. And so when you put all of those markets into the same bucket and you do these averages, people that read, I'm not saying don't read those stories, but they're not very informative for Seattle specifically. In Seattle, you still have a much higher average income than a normal city in America. You have housing stock that is bound by a lot of covenants that restrict multiple, like, denser and higher neighborhoods. That's just baked into the land code and the usage rights in neighborhoods. And you have people that come here for tech jobs that get paid very well. And so when you add all those things up, and the fact that when interest rates were in the eights, we saw builders just back out of the market. You know, for the past previous 5 years, builders were scooping up any lot they could that was zoned to put multiple housing on. You and I would see that all the time when we would be out. Next thing you know, you'd see a row of eight condos come in Ballard or Fremont, Seattle, you know, all over the place where it was rezoned. You were seeing that a lot. That dried up as interest rates skyrocketed. And so what does that mean? It means that there's not as many of those units coming on market right now. Like right now, we should be seeing all of those builders' units being completed now. And so going into 2024, we should open up the MLS and be like, oh man, there's 75 new townhomes listed in 98119. Why? Because these builders have been building, but they've stopped. So all that inventory went away.
Great.
The baby boomers that have a 2.79 or 3-point interest rate, they don't want to sell because they look and they go, okay, yeah, we'd make some cash if we sold this house, but then we have to move and there's nothing for us to buy.
And pay a lot of capital.
We're going to pay more money to get less house. So we're just going to stay here. So it doesn't surprise me if this is happening because we see, even in the business that we're doing, making all cash offers that get rejected because people think, oh, I'm going to do better because the market is hot right now. What did you think of it?
I think we told people, and I wrote about this week. And in fact, I ended up writing this guy back. And I've been talking to him this week. He DM'd me on my Facebook page and he got really mad at me during the holidays when I said, hey, I know interest rates are high. This is when you should be out shopping. As soon as Thanksgiving rolls around, Thanksgiving, Christmas, the sun goes down at 2:30. It's raining. There's holidays where kids are in and out of school. People are really focused here on vacationing. If you go to Maui during that time, just the place is packed with people from Seattle. Same if you go to Palm Springs, some of those places in California. If you go down to the high desert or you go down to Tucson, Scottsdale, it's packed with people from the Northwest, and specifically from Seattle here, the east side up north in Everett, you know, down to T-Town. That just, we're traveling. So people are sidetracked. Someone that's selling during the holidays, because you don't get as much money for your house during the holidays, you just don't. It's because they have to sell. They have to sell during the holidays. Most realtors say, hey, if you can handle the holding costs of hanging on to this home, let's sell in the spring, because the cycle in the Northwest is when the flowers come out, the buyers come out.
What did this guy on Facebook accuse you of?
He said that I was lying to people, that it was a horrible time to buy real estate, and that I was just chasing a deal. And I'm like, man, you do not know me. You do not know. In fact, this week, Sobey reached out, that's listened and followed us, and we've been writing to each other the last 10 years on Facebook. She said, hey, I have these two unique condos on Queen Anne. They're bought and paid for. Will you come see them? So I went and saw them this week, and I stood on these decks. They have these great views of the Olympics, of the Sound. And I said, Sobey, why are you going to sell these? And she said, I don't know. You know, maybe this is the time in the cycle to sell. And she's young. She's 58 years old. I said, well, and she was over there. She's puttering around. She had her handy guy over there. She's turning these units. I said, do you enjoy this? She said, yeah. I said, what's your cash flow? She said, well, I own them. So other than the preventative maintenance I'm doing and the taxes I have to pay and insurance and all that, she shared with me, and I won't share here, what her cash flow was. And I said, why would you sell these? I said, if you were 68 or 78, I understand that. She lives over on the east side with her husband. I said, you're enjoying this. You're good at this. And where else are you going to get the return that you're getting right now on these units? I said, call me in a year, call me in 5 years. I'd love to sell these units for you. I said, but even if we go through a down cycle, which we just went through a down cycle, and we're definitely now going back up in an up cycle this spring, something's really sprung specifically in the last 45 days. And we're recording this right now in early March, 2024. If you're listening to this at another time. And I said, I wouldn't sell these right now if I were you. And I said, I know that's being a bad real estate agent, because I should be chasing deals. I said, but I would just sit on these things and continue to do what you're doing. But let's continue to talk and have a conversation. And if you, she couldn't give me a good reason for selling. And she's like me. She loves owning it. She loves it. She absolutely loves it. So we'll continue to talk. So I told this gentleman, I said, man, you don't know me. I don't chase deals. In fact, a lot of times when I do the deal, I'm still in the deal. I was on the phone this morning with a couple. They bought a house here on Queen Anne. We converted this thing into a 3-unit Airbnb, this Craftsman. I had a 75-day booking at one of my Airbnbs, and I don't have room. Her name is Tracy, and she's coming up from Phoenix. And I called Helen, and I called her husband Anthony, and I said, hey, I got a 75-day stay for you in one of their units at $200 a night, and this company's paying for it. And I gave them the deal. I don't make any money doing that. I didn't make any money helping them convert that into an Airbnb or put up their ads or help provide the photographer, or they used our subs over there. They used my electrician, our builder, our condo. I don't make any money doing that. We made money on selling the house. So for me, it's like most realtors, when the deal is done, they're done and they're off on a beach somewhere. And for me, the relationship continues, and I love seeing real estate change people's lives the way it's changed mine, and I love seeing real estate help build wealth slowly.
Did you expect 14% year over year?
No. Wow. We see you. No, on the other side of this.
It's Ron and Don here with Mitch Weeks. You know him as Mitch.Loans. Mitch, a lot of people find themselves in this scenario. Maybe they're downsizing and they're like, where am I going to live when I sell this house? Because I don't have my other house yet. And it freaks them out, and sometimes they tap the brakes. Is there anything we can do in a loan way to help someone in that scenario?
Absolutely. We have a great new program. It's called Buy Before You Sell, and it's structured to help exactly those type of people. What you can do is you tap into the equity in your home in advance. So let's say you've been living in a house for a while, you've already paid it down, and about half of it's equity. You can get up to 80% of the value of your house in that equity. You get that in, and that's the down payment on your next home. Hmm. Not only that, but in this program, you're not hit for your debt on your old house or that loan, because it's a 0% interest loan. And because of that, you can buy your next house before you have to sell your current house. It means you don't have to move twice, and it just adds a lot less stress.
Yeah, absolutely adds a lot less stress. So if that's the scenario for you, or you've been having a stumbling block, if I don't know where I'm going to live first before I sell this house, give Mitch a call, or you can contact us. It's Mitch.Loans or RonandOnSitDown.com. Again, Mitch.Loans.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the Ron and Don Show. One of my favorite segments that we do, and we do this probably once a month, is we talk about the things that we're reading, and we talk about the things that maybe we're watching, and we talk about the things that we're listening to. So I know Ron's going to give us a couple things. I'll give you a couple things. As I always tell my son, it's important to read in order to lead. And I know for a lot of us, as we get older, it is harder to read. And so, like, I have some issues with one of my eyes. So a lot of times I read with one eye. It is still worth it. And I know a lot of us listen to Audible. I listen to Audible. It is still worth it, though, you guys, to sit down with a book, to engage with that book, to sit somewhere, to have a cup of coffee, to watch the sun go up, watch the sun go down, turn on some music in the background, to sit with yourself, to be present with yourself, and to read a book. It is still a wonderful thing to do. And I have just noticed my 13-year-old doesn't really listen to what I tell him anymore. He is just watching. And so as he has seen me read books, I watch him read books. In order to get him to play guitar, I had to start playing my guitar again, right? In order to exercise, he had to come see me exercise, which, by the way, he did his first Olympic squats the other day, which his form's not perfect yet, but it was pretty cool to see him do that. He'll ride a bike when he sees me ride my bike. And if you're a parent or grandparent, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So anyway, anytime having an opportunity to sit, because a lot of times I think about, you know, we go to a concert and somebody else is playing an instrument and we're watching them and we're sitting in a seat. We've paid a lot of money to do that. And maybe we're drinking a beer or your beverage of your choice or consuming whatever we're consuming. We're watching other people do great things. You go to a Kraken game. I'm going to go to a Kraken game next week with one of my friends. It's their birthday, and they want to go to a – so we're going to go. But again, we're sitting there, and we're watching other people do great things. Sometimes it's important for us to sit with ourselves and try to do a great thing. Like Ron, for instance, I know, and I'm really proud of him for doing this because he's curious. He is studying Spanish right now, right? But you have to sit with yourself to do that. Ron has become a very good woodworker. And in fact, I have one of his gifts that I use daily that's really neat. He can make pens. He can make little cut. He's become, if you go up to his tiny house, a lot of the work up at his tiny house he did before our friend Gary passed away. He needed to have a railing fixed. Ron was able to go there, and a younger version of him, he couldn't have done that, but he has taught himself to be curious and to work with tools and to have a curious mind. So it is important, and I think a curious mind sometimes starts with sitting down and reading, right, and doing, and sometimes listening. But then with that information, being inspired by it and going out in the world and doing something with it. So, Ron, what are you listening to? What are you reading? What are you watching? What are you learning?
I'm reading a book right now that I'm very much enjoying. It's called The Fun Habit. It's by PhD Mike Rucker. I don't know how I found this book, but the subtitle is Find Delight and Fix Unhappy. And so as a little bit of background, like I've read a bunch of books on happiness. And I know you have as well. Everything from the Dalai Lama's book on happiness to the Happiness Equation. Lots of books on happiness, not a lot of books on fun. And so the big eye opener for me, and I'm only about maybe 40% of the way through this book, because it's a book that requires you to stop and to journal and to do things in order for it to really happen. But the thing that just that was an eye opener for me is he makes this argument at the beginning of the book that he says, I'm not saying you shouldn't pursue happiness. He's like, but in the kind of American, you know, productivity way that we think about happiness is it's this constant pursuit. You're constantly pursuing happiness and then checking to see if you're as happy as you thought you would be. I don't know if you have that same thing, Don, of where it's like, oh, I'm going to really try to be happy. And then you go, am I happy? Could I be happier? Maybe if I did that thing a little bit better, I'd be 1% happier. And you get into this mindset of like, you're constantly pursuing it, and it's always out in front of you. I was like, someday I'm going to be happier. Someday I'm going to be happier. If I did this, that, or the other thing, or subtract this, that, or the other thing, I'd be happier, happier, happier. And he said this, he goes, that's all fine and good, but in America, especially if you're in the productivity culture and you're trying to maximize all the time, we don't think about fun. So he said, while happiness is this never ending pursuit, fun is a binary thing. You're either having fun or you're not. And you know it. You know when you are having fun and you're not having fun. So he's like, if you take some time and you design moments of your life that give you the likelihood that you're going to have fun, you're punctuating your life with moments that you know are fun. Then if going to a concert is fun for you, you know you're going to have more fun at that concert than you would doing something else. So he says, put yourself in the position to have fun. And you know it when you're there. It's one of those things that when you're done with something, you go, that was fun. And so when you find yourself having that reaction to things, he calls it, you're going to generate your fun file. And so and he goes, this is the part that short circuits us in our culture, is we have this belief that fun things should just be spontaneous. You shouldn't have to work for them. They should just show up in your life and require zero effort. And he's like, that is not true. We're going to build this fun file. You're going to put yourself into positions to have fun. And he's like, I'm telling you, in the same way that we talked about in the last episode of just letting your brain relax, he's like, if you just relax and inject these moments of fun virtually every day, and he says there's no other result than you will be happier, because you will be having moments of fun and delight and things happen in your life on a regular basis. And then the final thing, and then I'll shut up, he's like, and he goes, you also need to redefine fun a little bit. So for some people, they're like, well, fun is I'm skydiving, or I'm mountain rappelling, or I'm getting pulled behind a water ski boat, or I'm going down, you know, I'm summoning Mount Rainier. Like, they're these very large sort of adrenalized things. And he's like, those count, but also putting on your favorite album in your house and just kind of, you know, listening to great music, that could be fun. For some people, reading a great book can be fun. There can be low-key fun things as well that are very satisfying. And as you build this fun file out, it's caused me to really look at some things and examine how I'm doing it.
Did you have fun on the destination wedding?
Sometimes I didn't, sometimes I didn't.
No.
And so that's the sort of thing. Like, I'm not a sit by a pool for 8 hours and day drink guy. That's like just not my personality.
I'm not as well.
And so there were a lot of people there that wanted to do that, and I'm not judging them, but like, I would go down, I'd check in. It's like, okay, like I don't need to stay here and stand here for 5 hours and just drink during the day. So that's not fun for me, but back to it's fun for them. Great. Like, they can do that. So anyway, the revelation of, like, the constant pursuit of happiness usually is a dead end for most people.
Yeah.
But if you can do these fun moments where you know you're having fun, that seems to be a revelation to me. And so I'm pursuing that. I'm going through the exercises in the book. I'm trying to construct these moments to where to just see what happens. Because I've found myself sometimes stuck of going, is this all there is? Like, wow, my life is maybe not in a spot where I thought it would be at this stage of the game. And so am I happy? And you go down that rabbit hole where this short circuits that whole thing. It's like, go do something fun. You'll know it.
Yeah.
You'll know if you're honest with yourself. You're either for you, like taking a run, going to, you know, on a trail run or whatever, that you can define those things as fun, or even the outcome is fun, even if the actual exercise might not be fun. The result at the end of it can be fun for you. So anyways, just it's an interesting book. Very interesting. It's called The Fun Habit.
I love it. All right. What's in your fun file right now?
It's in my fun file right now. I do like novel travel experiences. That's a huge one. I like creating things, like you had mentioned earlier. Like when I challenge myself, I put on my list when I was traveling, like I had made this my first bag out of leather, and it's fine, but it's like I know I could do better. So I'm like, all right, I'm gonna find a different version of that.
Awesome.
Make a better. So like at the while you're doing it, there are moments where it's like, this is drudgery. Then at the end, we're like, hey, I made a thing. Like that's fun for me. So I have a list. I some of them I'm gonna keep private right now because I want to. You know, it's one thing when you're writing it on a beach in Cancun. It's like, this is going to be my list. And then when you get back to reality, to make sure that those are still things you can do. But you also mentioned another one that I'm going to do is like pick up the guitar again and like play it instead of just dinking around, like write a piece of music, which I used to do when I was a kid all the time.
Yeah. Great. Love it. Good. Couple things watching. My son and I have been, we have talked about, instead of just turning on the TV and looking for something and watching something, it's an event. If we're going to turn the TV on, it's an event. What we're going to watch, we're going to watch on purpose. We're going to look forward to it. We're going to talk about it. So I hadn't seen The Holdovers, and I'd heard a lot about The Holdovers with Paul Giamatti. Have you seen that movie?
I have not yet. I heard that he's nominated for an Academy Award, and it was great.
I think you'll love it. So he really likes Paul Giamatti right now. He was interested in Paul Giamatti, and I said, hey, let's watch this show called The Holdovers. So we did a little research on it. We watched it the other night. We went to the store. We made a certain dinner. It's similar to what they're eating in The Holdovers. And then we ended up having some leftovers. Very, very... so then we decided from that, maybe what we should do is start watching maybe some of the movies that are... And I've never done this before, that are up for Academy Awards. So we watched Leonardo DiCaprio's movie the other night. Have you seen that?
Flowers of the Killer Moon?
Yes.
I have not seen that one either.
So before we watched it, though, we knew that it was a true story. So in the morning, we sit, we have breakfast. We were starting to do some research on the 1920s. This particular Native American tribe, did they really have mineral rights, head rights, oil rights? Were there really a lot of white men out there that were marrying into this tribe, which is true? And did all these murders begin to happen, and who was behind these murders? So, and Robert De Niro in it stole the show. He's incredible. It's a very long movie, so he watched it in two parts. So we began to watch that the other night. And because it's connected to history and real history, we're sitting there a lot of times watching the movie, and then we're wondering, is that true? Did that really happen? Is this Hollywood? So it's created some really nice conversations. And then I also told you that we are watching a movie that's basically a 10-part series. It's on Apple. Have you been watching it?
Masters of the Air.
Yeah.
I think I'm behind one or two episodes, so I need to catch up.
So he, through this, has learned all about the Tuskegee Airmen. He didn't know anything about the airmen, black pilots. They called them the Red Tails. Basically, a lot of bombers before D-Day were going down Luftwaffe was just wasting. You'd send 30 bombers out and one would come back. We wanted to know if that was a true story. We wanted to know if these Stalags, because all we knew was Hogan's Heroes, but we didn't know, are these Stalags real? How were American pilots treated? Were they actually treated this way by the Luftwaffe? And what was the SS? And how come you'd want to be in a Luftwaffe, which was the Air Force? How come you would want to be in their Stalag, their prison, versus an SS prison, right? So all these stories came up. Did the Red Tails and these black pilots... And a lot of people thought that African-Americans were too dumb to drive a Sherman tank or fly a P-51 Mustang. Did they really show up later in the war, or was it earlier? And did they really save a lot of these white pilots who were the bomber pilots? So it has caused us to kind of jump into history. And it's really been a really beautiful, cool thing. And then finally, I'll say this, and Ron has suggested this to me, and you just mentioned it. There's a podcast. It's now in its second season. I listened to the second season. There was only – sometimes you listen to a podcast and you love it, and then it just goes away, and you're like – and sometimes they're like in the middle of – they've done 16 episodes, and then the podcast disappears. I was listening to a guy who was on HGTV that I really liked, and he just got too busy to do the podcast anymore. His podcast just disappeared, and I was really bummed because it had these great story arcs. Anyway, Anderson Cooper, you told me about, and you had just mentioned, is that all there is?
Right.
And why don't you talk about All There Is? It's in its second season, and it's really helped me not only process, this is the time of year my little sister died, this is the time of year March 14th, her birthday comes up. It's been a decade now, so it's really helped me process that and also loosen our friend Gary. I had told his widow about All There Is, and initially I don't think she's ready for it. I think she's in a place now where she's beginning to listen to it and finding it very helpful.
Anderson Cooper trying to process the death of his mother, who was Gloria Vanderbilt. His dad also died a while ago, and his brother, who was, they were only like a year apart, had taken his life by suicide by jumping out of a balcony in a New York skyscraper. And so Cooper, some pretty horrific things
in front of his mom. Yeah.
Right in front of his mom. So it's his journey on how to process grief. And if you need a place to start, the Stephen Colbert episode, who Stephen Colbert had his dad and two brothers died in a plane crash when he was very young. The Stephen Colbert episode is nothing short of miraculous. So it's a very good, he talks to President Joe Biden as well. It's a very, very good series, and he takes you inside him trying to sort through his mother's possessions. His mom, obviously, she was very well off, but has an entire apartment in New York that's just stock full of their stuff.
Two apartments.
And he has to go through that and say, what do I keep? Yeah. What do I give away? And we're talking about Gloria Vanderbilt stuff, so it's a little bit unlike most of us,
right,
where you just take it to Goodwill. Like, you don't want to take like three suitcases of Gloria Vanderbilt's clothing to the Salvation Army necessarily.
Yeah, and his father died when he was young. His father is a great writer. So is Anderson Cooper. And then he ends up finding in his mother's things, he ends up finding some of the writings he's never seen before of things his dad created. And then he ends up finding a recording of his father. A lot of times when your mom and dad has died, and I have a friend, his mom died when he was four. And I said, what do you miss the most? And he said, I wish I could hear my mom's voice again. And probably through AI, that's going to begin to happen, right? But anyway, All There Is, Anderson Cooper, podcast of your choice. Really good, you guys. And again, Masters of the Air, you know, Spielberg and Hanks are behind Saving Private Ryan.
Band of Brothers,
The Pacific. And then Master of the Air. It's really, really good. So you can watch it on Apple and then just cancel after that. I keep telling our friend Scotty, I'm like, man, I keep, because his uncle died. His bomber went down in World War II. So he's really interested in all this. And he's too cheap to go out and just get Apple so he can watch this. So I keep telling him about it. And Scotty, I know you're listening to this podcast. Stop being so cheap and just get Apple for a season. All right. Hey, guys, thanks for listening to our podcast on the podcast player of your choice. We really appreciate it. Thanks for hitting like. When you hit the subscribe button, then these shows just show up. We drop them every Monday, Wednesday, Thursday. Friday is real estate only. So if you're thinking about buying, investing, or you're thinking about being on the sales side, make sure you listen on Friday. I wish when I was first starting about real estate that someone did our Friday show. A lot of times when you listen to real estate podcasts, they're trying to sell you tapes or CDs or come to the seminar. We're not doing any of that bullshit. We're just telling you what we are learning, from our clients.
Especially since nobody has tape players anymore.
I tell you what, people are still selling CDs, though. It's pretty crazy. So, and don't forget, if you need us in your real estate journey, we sell the sound. We are happy to help. Just go to ronadonsitdown.com, and we will meet you wherever you're at in your real estate journey. People are starting to yell at me as I walk down the street. I heard it in the gym, the store the other day. Hey, it's Ron and Don. It used to be, why wouldn't it be? Or it used to be, hey, it's Ron and Don. We travel near and far from our sports radio days. Now it's, hey, it's Ron and Don. Don't you guys sell the sound? Hell yeah, we do. Hey, for Ron, myself, Charlie the dog, we want to give a shout out to the guy that produces this show. He's been going through a cancer battle himself, and from his hospital bed in Ireland, he has still been producing this show. So our love to our friend Paul, who really has done an amazing job for us, and he has a lot of courage. And so we are just thinking of him today, our friend Alex that helps with the podcast as well. And let's not forget John too. For Charlie the dog, myself, Ron, here comes my little boy, our trumpet player, our tuba player, now our School of Rock guitar player, to play us out. You've been listening to the Ron and John Show. Head up, shoulders back. Hi! Ron and John Radio Network.
Now keep your head up and your shoulders back and keep blowing that trumpet, and we'll see you next time.
Only.
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 Only
on the Ron and Don Radio Network.